Hello. That was very intense house music there that he played. I was going to come up and we're all dancing. See, I just love the Belgian audience. I was just talking to the guys earlier about whether I should use my jokes on you guys or save them for the Dutch. See, you guys are laughing. That makes me good. That feeds my energy and stuff like that. Because we were talking, Glenn Block gave a very good presentation yesterday, and he was talking to the audience. He's like, "Hey, how's it going, Belgium?" Crickets. Silence. "How you guys doing? Wahoo! I'm American. Woohoo! Yeehaw!" All right. Well, this is a very big crowd. Thank you so much for coming to this talk. So I'm going to talk about NuGet. How many people here are using NuGet today? Okay, good. So not a lot. That's good because I want to introduce the rest of you guys to NuGet. I think it's going to be pretty cool. Forgive me, my voice is coming and going, but I'll do my very best. So NuGet is an open source package management system. And if you have done Ruby or if you've worked in Linux, you're probably familiar with package management systems like GEMS on Ruby on Rails, or in Linux, things like apt-get and the Synaptic Package Manager. I want to make a differentiation between existing package management systems and NuGet. Things like apt-get, apt-get, that allow you to bring packages down on Linux, those are system-level package managers. So when you say something like apt-get Tetris on a Linux machine, you're bringing down a system-level package from some central repository, and you're installing it at the operating system level. Okay? That's not NuGet. So NuGet is not system level, it's not machine level. Things like GEMS bring down project-level libraries for Ruby on Rails, and they are local development time. So I want to make sure that you're clear when we talk about package management systems. There are development time, compile time, local project level package management systems, and then there are system level installing some library for the operating system. So NuGet is on the developer side. NuGet is not a way to really go and get applications. It's not a way to install things. It's not a replacement for MSIs. It's a developer convenience. There is another package management system you may have heard of called CoApp, COAPP. That solves the apt-get system-level libraries install time problem. So CoApp and NuGet, well, they are related package management systems. I don't think of them as being competing. So NuGet is actually run by the Outer Curve Foundation, and the liaison for that and the project manager at Microsoft is Phil Hack. You may know Phil from ASP.NET MVC. And Phil coordinates the Microsoft commits and the Microsoft contribution to this project. But it is actually a true open source project. It's not owned by Microsoft, it's owned by Outer Curve. Outer Curve was formerly the CodePlex Foundation. This is really significant. Now, I realize that we all know Microsoft is a little behind on the open source thing. But this project takes external commits. So if you find bugs in NuGet or you have a feature that you want to implement, you can go and get this down at CodePlex. You can make changes and send a pull request, and it may be committed into the product, which will eventually ship in Visual Studio proper. This is really significant because a lot of people never thought that would happen at Microsoft. Microsoft has a lot of examples of source opened as opposed to open source. For example, ASP.NET MVC is open source, but it doesn't take takebacks, it doesn't take commits. So you can't give us a patch for MVC yet. But it's open source, so you can fork it. NuGet actually can take commits, and I'm hoping that this is an example of Microsoft starting to open the floodgates of commits and really, really embracing open source in the true sense of the word. There's a lot of packages from the community that have already shown up in NuGet. We'll talk a little bit about them. We'll show you how to make NuGet packages. We'll show you the simple packages and the complex ones. I want you to start thinking about how you're going to use NuGet. Will you use it at your enterprise? Will you use it for open source? While the public-facing aspects of NuGet are very much open source, if you're a commercial software vendor, I think you should start thinking about how you can use it for your software. And I've talked to our friends at Telerik and other software vendors about what they can do as well. So I think you'll see a lot of cool discussion around NuGet. Those discussions are all done in public. So if you go to nuget.codeplex.com, that's all done in the open. There's no internal mailing list for NuGet. The source code lives on CodePlex in Mercurial. It doesn't live inside of Microsoft in some secret Microsoft source place. So we're really trying to do this the right way up front. We surely will make mistakes, but we're doing our best. Okay, so what is the goal? What is NuGet trying to solve? I think we've all had this experience. Oops, I'm not trying to take over the world, sorry. I want to make open source as easy as add reference. And I really want to make just adding software and Lego blocks as easy as add reference. So how do you do that? We want to build up this ecosystem. We want to really get people involved in open source and creating snappable Lego blocks. Right now, using software in .NET has a lot of tediousness. Setting up something simple is a tedious process. If you want to go and add a library to a project, take some existing third party, whether it's open source or not, what's that process look like? Okay. First, with all good stories, I start by Googling with Bing for the name of that project. So let's say that I want to go and find ELMA. ELMA is Error Logging Modules and Handlers. It is truly and without peer one of the greatest open source projects and one of the earliest ones for ASP.NET. It's an error logging management system for ASP.NET. And it never really took off. Like, it has a big following, but it never became mainstream because getting it and installing it is a hassle. And it's one of those things, like, I don't know if Belgians have this experience, but in the States, if we do something really amazing on the computer, we just have to, like, open the laptop up and then just, like, run down the hallway, just like, oh my God, did you see this? Did you see what I did? Look at this. Oh my God. You can actually know these kind of people because it's almost like the laptop is attached to their hand. You know that guy? The one who's like sitting like this in the hallway and just has always got the laptop. He might as well just weld it to his arm. ELMA is one of those projects where when you make it work, it's like, ah. Or in the States, what we do is we'll install it. Then we'll tell our boss it's going to take 8 hours to install it. And then we work from home. It's going to take a while. I'm going to go and really concentrate on this. So we go and we Bing for this, and then we say, well, okay, I got lucky. It's the first thing. I know we've all searched for open source projects and not found them on the first try, especially open source projects that have a repository and a blog and another website and an old Tumblr and a Google code, but we moved it over to GitHub, da-da-da-da-da. Finding stuff is a huge problem. Then I go to the, in this case, Google code, where ELMA is located. And I say, well, downloads, that looks right. So I'll click on that. I've got a couple of different choices here. I've got source, and I don't know which one to pick, really. But it turns out that that's the right one. And I don't know what that is, but yeah, awesome. I've got Bluetooth. I've got TCP/IP. I've got Wi-Fi. What am I going to do when I have a computer that's in my pocket with a phone, and I've got another computer? I'm going to take a picture of the screen, put the data. Why don't I just print it out, scan it, and then fax it back to myself as a PDF, and then OCR that into an email, and then turn it into a SOAP message and put it on a queue, and then send that off? Don't understand QR codes. Does not make any sense. So I get that, and then I open it, save that zip file in Explorer. But I have to hit properties because I downloaded it from the internet, so it's not trusted. So I can't forget to push that unblock button. So I unblock it. And then I have to go and figure out where I'm going to put it. because there's no standard place to put references in .NET libraries, are there? Some people have a lib folder, some people have a references folder, some people put it in their project, some people put it above their project. I need to extract the assemblies and then figure out which one of these does what I want it to do. Then I have to go and say add reference. Go and find it, figure out which ones I have to refer to. Then I have to go into the web config and actually read the manual. That's the part that always gets people with Elma. Then I have to figure out which parts go in and how to merge that cleanly with my existing project. And then it works. And that was to get one DLL to work. And I challenge you to do that manually in less than about 10 or 15 minutes. For most people, it takes, you know, an hour, and it's usually the reading of the manual where people give up. And that's for one assembly. So then what do I do when I want version 2? Or I want 15 different assemblies? So that is getting an open source project today. That sucks. So I think we can do better. And that's all the slides. So now it's a big pile of demos. Ah, okay. Now I feel fresh. I watched a Kung Fu movie yesterday. So now I'm just like... So, makes my coding better. All right. Let's see. How do we want to do this? Command line first or GUI first? I never really know. Should I drag a data grid into the Northwind database, or should we just do all this at the DOS prompt? Should I help Microsoft? I don't know. I know that I'm a victim of software counterfeiting today, so yeah, I'm not going to help you, Microsoft. Okay, let's start up Visual Studio. Let's do the GUI first. And the Package Manager console looks like I left it open there. I'm going to close that. The Curtain of Patience. There we go. What is that? Is that your ringtone? Do you guys have Charlie Brown in Belgium? You know who Charlie Brown is? Like Charlie Brown and Snoopy and all those guys? You have that? No? You know how the parents sound? That's exactly what that sounded like. All right. File, new, project. And now, NuGet works anywhere. It's not an ASP.NET MVC 3 thing. We're sneaking it in with MVC 3. So if you install MVC 3, we'll give you NuGet. But it's not specific to the web. If you're a Silverlight person or command line person or whatever, to be clear, use it anywhere. If I go to Tools, to the Extension Manager, NuGet is right here. NuGet is a tiny little 600K what's called a VizX file, Visual Studio extension. It's actually right there. And you can go up to nuget.org and get it, or you can go to Tools Extension Manager and search for it, but it's small, it doesn't require a reboot, it's nice and clean and organized. It's not a big deal. I say that because it's not scary. Actually, it looks like it's only 400K. So it's easy to install, takes no time at all. And if you go up to nuget.org, click that button, and boom, that's it. So don't be afraid of it. You may also already have it. Also, NuGet works in Visual Studio Express, which is really cool. So you can use the free version, and you can still have that extension installed. So file, new, project, MVC application. MVC application 20. This is how I judge people when they come to interview, if they bring their own laptop. If it says MVC application 3, and they're like, yeah, I have lots of experience in MVC. No, man. I want to see big numbers there showing me that you're trying. You know, somebody with console application 200, that's a person I want to hang out with. So MVC application. Hit OK. I'm just using MVC because it's a nice example. I talked a little bit about this in the keynote. Did anyone here wake up and come to the keynote yesterday? A couple of you guys? Okay, good. Then I won't spend too much time. But there are existing packages that we ship with MVC 3 tooling update. So this is the only example of this now, but here is packages that are pre-installed. So this project has packages already installed. And you can tell if there are packages installed in a project because there's a packages.config file. And then there are the packages that are already installed. But if I want to go get Elma, the thing that we just did, I just come and say add library package reference. And I have to click on online. You'll have only one of these. I'll show you more about that in a minute. And I'll search for Elma. And this is actually using OData to talk to NuGet.org. So here I'm going to go and say install. And there's Elma. And if I run it and hit Elma.axd, there's Elma. All right? So all that work that I showed in those click-throughs is done like that. One of the cool ways to really show the power of NuGet would be to open up the web config and show you the Elma section, to show you where it added HTTP handlers and modules, both in here and in IIS 7. I'm going to do this. I'm going to make this really small, so you can totally read that. And does anyone know what this does? I only have one choice, apparently. Full screen. Yeah, that's really helpful. Thank you. Actually, I like to do my own style of full screen. I just go like this. I go, and I never use that, and I never use that. I never use that, and I never write tests because I work for Microsoft, and I never debug because my code always works, and I never search for things because I'm awesome, and I don't know what that does, and I don't like to drag things around, and I don't find things, and there you go, full screen. So here's my web config on that left side there, and I'm going to come into add library package reference. And you can see the first choice here is installed packages. There's the ones that were pre-installed, and then there's Elma. So I'm going to hit uninstall. See our web config over here. Bless you. Watch. So not only will we install all that stuff into the web config, but we can actually uninstall it in a non-destructive way. So how do we do that? Let's go and add Elma back. And we'll add Elma back, and I like to show people like how stuff really works internally. So we'll show you that. We'll hit it again. Hit close. Hey, your web config changed. Bam. I'm going to right click here and say open folder in Explorer. I'm going to go up one folder, and there's a packages folder. And that's where those packages live. In there is Elma, and Elma comes with a new package that we'll talk a little bit more about in a minute. I can see the library right there. And then in content, there's a web.config.transform. That web.config transform looks like that. That's it. So rather than coming up with some complicated XSLT or XML document transformation language, instead, we just do a tree diff. We'll take the nodes that are in the web config and your existing web config, and we'll add the nodes that are not already there. And then we keep that package around in the packages folder. so that when we uninstall, we just do a subtraction. And if you left, if you changed one of those lines, then we won't touch it because you changed it. It's a really elegant and clean way to add things to config. People always say, well, why didn't you use XSLT? It's like, well, we're not trying to do a document transformation. We're trying to add and remove cleanly. And you'll notice that that's all it is. That's all it is. Elma is two folders, the lib folder for the DLL and the content folder for web config transform. And those folder names are standardized. Those folders are standard and convention over configuration. It's something that the Ruby guys always tease the Microsoft guys about, is that with Ruby guys, the file is named this and the folder is there and that's just how it is. And with Microsoft guys, there's like a 2 megabyte XML file and you can edit that and that's how you make things happen. So we're trying to embrace a little bit more common sense on the Microsoft framework. Let's do this then. Let's go and what's to be the most fun way to do this? Let's make some stuff. We'll do it from the command line. So let's go to temp Belgium rocks. This is my library. Cool. So I'm there, right? And let's do the let's do some code the way that everyone codes, because everyone codes like this. And then he made us watch him type for like an hour. What was that about? Who is this American who's coming here and making us watch him type? And he's probably going to screw it up anyway. And then he's going to have to open it in Notepad and we're all going to laugh at him. Because no one could have gotten that right on the first try, because that would be weird. And he's probably going to screw this part up as well, because he's totally forgotten how to do this. Crap. Oh. Lowercase? Oh. All right. That actually compiled. Cool. I didn't think that was going to work. This is like my sixth Diet Coke today. Breakfast of champions. All right. So that is my awesome DLL. And at the command line, I can type NuGet, and I have a command line version of NuGet. This is something you download separately. And I can go and say NuGet spec, and I'll get a package file. This is actually a kind of a standardized format for packaging, and I can go and set this up. Now, this packaging file is pretty much the default. It basically got me started. It jump-started me. And I could go in here and fill out some details, except it's just a boilerplate. It's not really convenient. So maybe a better way to do things would be to make a folder called lib, and to move everything that's awesome into my lib, and then go and grab a, where did I put that? Assembly info file that I made in here, see? Because it's 2.0, because it's awesome. And we all have assembly info files, right? And then I'll go back over here, and then we'll bring this back. You guys know about that, right? F7? This is something you can take back to the office and tease the young people about. Anyone under 30 who doesn't know what that is, you can just be like, and they'd be like, whoa, dude, because that's how young people talk. Dude, whoa, what was that? Is that Windows 7? No, that's DOS 4. Young man. Okay, so I just recompiled that using my assemblyinfo.cs. And now I've got some versioning information in there. So I'm going to delete that NuGet package, and I'm going to say NuGet spec, and I'm going to point it towards, oops, look at that. I accidentally compiled it into assemblyinfo.dll. So we'll get rid of that. Okay. NuGet. I can't type on stage. NuGet. I type like 100 words a minute, but 90 of them are errors. So now I'm making a spec, except I can actually create that spec from a file. Oops, not that file. That file. And it'll go and it'll try to suck some of that information out. In this case, it totally failed. Why? Anyone want to guess? I would love to know. What the hell is going on? Delete, delete. And then he made us watch him debug his freaking talk for like an hour. What is that about? Did I get everything there? Let's try it again. NuGet spec. Okay, that makes a default spec. And NuGet spec lib. Awesome. It was fun initially, but then it became embarrassing to watch. I'm totally doing something wrong, and I don't know what it is. You know, maybe I don't have the latest version. So NuGet at the command line will actually go and update itself, which is kind of cool. So maybe that's it. I don't know why that didn't work. Forgive me for screwing that demo up. That makes me sad. Well, what that was supposed to do, and I've obviously forgotten to do something where my assembly info is actually not valid, is you can make a NuGet spec and get a default spec. You can say NuGet spec against a DLL. It'll reflect on the DLL, look at the assembly info, and then pull all the information out of the assembly info and put that in the spec. You can also say NuGet and point it at a csproj file and make a NuGet from that. So the point I'm trying to make is that making a NuGet is really easy. I usually do it manually myself because I like more control. I usually make the NuGet spec file, putting it together manually, and then I'll show you another way to edit it actually as well. Let's get rid of my all evidence of that failure and go back up here, and we'll do it the way I have done it before. So package spec, we'll rename that to awesome.newspec, and I'll just edit it. Not very awesome, was it? You can put in dependencies on other NuGet packages, if you like. You can tag things. So you can make, you know, say I want this for web matrix or something else. And then I can say NuGet pack. So that can't have spaces. The not awesome continues. So what that does is creates this new package. And notice that that new package file included the version number. So if I went back to my spec and bumped this up and then packed it up again. Now there's two. See? Now that file, we can actually double click on, because there's a thing called the NuGet Package Explorer. And that NuGet Package Explorer is a click once application that you can use to open up one of these files, as well as edit that package metadata. So if you don't like that XML file and you never want to see it, you can also say file new and create it manually. So you never actually have to see that. So we're trying to give people a lot of options. So I showed you how you can pull NuGet packages in really easily. You can say NuGet spec from the command line. You can say NuGet spec, point it to a CS proj. I'm not sure why the DLL thing didn't work, but you can do that too. I've done it before. You can use NuGet Package Explorer to create these and then pack them up. The best way to learn about NuGet is to actually look at other projects and other people's projects and how they created them. So, for example, I know that David Ebo put a package up that shows a number of features. So because these NuGet packages are kind of out in the open, you can open them up and explore them. You can look at their scripts and see how someone made that. So here I'm going to say add library package. And actually, you know what we could do is we'll use the one that Phil made with me at on stage at Mix. The Phil Awesome. Notice that this one, Phil.awesome, has a dependency because he can't be awesome without me. So when I hit install, it actually said Phil.awesome requires Scott.awesome, so then it brings them down together. I look at packages config. You can see that one depends on the other. And I can open these up, look at the packages folder, and Phil's new package file is there. So I can double-click on that. I can look at the metadata inside of the package manager. You can see the dependency there. But the thing that's interesting is that these files, these are actually just zip files. So I can rename this .zip. And extract it and see all the crap that's inside, including Phil's new spec file. And you can see the dependency there. If you go to nuget.codeplex.com, there's actually a number of explanations of that dependency version line on line 12 there. You can say things like, well, I depend on version 1, or I depend on version 1 and below, or 1 and up, or this range, or whatever. So you can be very specific about those things that you require. You can also have licenses. So you see how this one does not require license acceptance? I'll show you one that does. That'll basically pop a dialog and make sure that you said it was okay. It was okay. Now, one of the things that's interesting about Phil's package is that if I call it Phil.awesome, oh, thank you, Phil. Phil is making me look bad. Apparently Phil is awesomer. I don't even think that's a word. I'm going to put a breakpoint there. When Phil built his package, he said NuGet push. And NuGet push, after you've packed, will publish it up to the NuGet.org server or another NuGet server if you've got one. So he pushed it up there and then also added an option where he says NuGet push, and I think the option is source. So one of the things that's really difficult about open source software is that maybe you get it down on your machine, but then you want to debug it. And that's almost impossible. It's a huge hassle. You have the library and it's working, but now you've found a bug. So what do? You bring down the open source project, try to get it to build just so that you can step into the source. That's a big problem. So what you can do now with NuGet is you can build your package as normal and push it to NuGet.org. And then if you say dash source and you're building from a CS proj, it'll actually package up another NuGet package, except this one will contain the PDBs and source code and publish that off to some partners that we have at symbolsource.org so that I can do this. F5, F11, and look, I've actually stepped into Phil's DLL. And notice this weird path. You think that paths are weird when you get into like Microsoft, Windows, System 32. You've never seen weird paths until today, my friends. I didn't even know paths could go that far. But that is how symbol servers work. If I go to tools, options, down into debugging symbols, I've added not only the Microsoft symbol servers, but I've also gone and added symbolsource.org, and you should check that out. So if you have an open source project and maybe you're either looking at publishing NuGet packages or have already published NuGet packages, how can you make it even easier for someone to potentially debug your project? Because we are keeping the versions the same and those two packages have the same names, you can always be sure that you'll be able to cleanly and automatically debug into open source projects. And of course, it's not just about open source. Think about how you could do this at your work. How many enterprise libraries might you want to share between organizations at your company? You want to make it easy for them to use, but also easy for them to debug without necessarily having them build the entire project. They might be able to point to a line of code and say, that's the problem and fix it. Think how easy that would be for them to be able to do that, and they would not have to, go and build the whole system. So that's actually a new feature in NuGet 1.2 that I think is pretty amazing. So let me go back into Visual Studio here, and we'll do something a little bit more complicated. Let's go and do an MVC application, and I'll start bringing down a few packages, and we'll open those up and see what's going on. You can bring stuff down from NuGet.org, which is the default. But if we go to the Library Package Manager and look at settings, there's the NuGet official package source, but you can also have NuGet packages that are local. So if you're on an airplane or you have packages internally at your corporation, you can set package sources to folders, to internal servers, or to network paths. So the easiest NuGet server for you at your enterprise would be a network path, and you throw some files in there. And if you want to go on an airplane, you can have a local cache, and a newer version of NuGet will include a built-in offline cache for those kind of scenarios. So you can see here that I've got number two, the NuGet package source, but then I've got a bunch of other wacky things that I'll show you. And then you can move them up and down in the order that they get searched for. Now, so far, I've only done add library package reference from this dialog box, but I can also bring up PowerShell in the Package Manager console. Here, I can pick the package source. All will just go through them in order. I can also pick the project that it's going to refer to. So I can say things like get package. I just typed in get package. I can see the packages that are installed. That's basically the contents of the package.config file. And I can also say install package, and let's bring down entity framework dot, and I hit tab. And that's actually going to go off, and it gave me dynamic IntelliSense. So it actually queried with OData and then populated this dropdown automatically. So there's a number of things. See how nice and clean the Entity Framework team has done things? You've got like dot sample and dot patterns and dot this. So if you have an open source project called foo, you should also have foo.sample. These are all just conventions that you pick up as you learn how NuGet works. Here I'm going to pick Entity Framework.SQL Server Compact. This is the same thing as if I did it from the graphical interface. And there we go. So there's a couple of interesting things that are happening here. This is actually a little bit more complicated of a package. So this package, Entity Framework SQL Server Compact, needed SQL Server Compact. And you notice it says greater than or equal to this version. Didn't have it, so I went and looked for it. It looked for a thing called Web Activator that I'll talk about. And then notice this license here. So that is getting displayed. So if you have a specific open source license or a commercial license that you need people to require acceptance of, you can set that up as we saw before in the NuGet package. And then it goes and adds them all. So now if I say get package, I can see those. Now you don't need to spend time looking at the packages file, but because this is NuGet in depth, I wanted to show you how some of these work, because they're pretty interesting. Here is the SQL Server Compact one. I'm going to double-click on the new package and use the Package Explorer. You can see the dependencies down here on the left. You can see the license acceptance, and then the license terms actually point to a RTF file, a rich text file that we can display. We can even pop a dialog box. So in the command line, we showed the text. But if we said add library package reference, we would have popped a dialog box and they would have to accept it or not. On the right-hand side here, though, we see more than just a lib folder. We see also content and tools. So these are some additional standard folders. So before, when I was trying to make that Scott is awesome and I failed with my one little demo there, I made a lib folder. So the minimal NuGet package would be a DLL and a lib folder. That would be it. That's why I wanted to show you the simplest possible example, a spec file, a live folder, and a DLL. Then you could add to that, and you could have a web config transform. But this particular project is a great example of a reasonably typical but still a little bit complex project. We've got the live folder. We've got a content folder. Anything in the content folder will automatically show up in your solution. So the content folder is the root of your solution. So we've got a couple of files here. We've got the Entity Framework SQL Server Compact CS.pp, but that's inside a thing called app_start. Let's look at this .pp file. PP means pre-process. Sometimes when you have a project called MVC application 37,758 or whatever, you want to create a class or a file, and you want the namespace to be the same as your project. So you need some basic pre-processing. You see how it says namespace, $root namespace right there? That's an environment variable that's kind of not environment like the DOS way of thinking, but the Visual Studio way of thinking. There's all these variables that are available in the context of Visual Studio about the current project, the current namespace. There's a whole list of them at MSDN. If you name your file something.pp, we'll simply look in that file and we'll just replace it. So here it says namespace root namespace app_start. If I switch over here and look at the file, it's called application 20 because that was my root namespace. One of those things that's very simple once you understand those conventions. And this is all documented on the NuGet site. So this project has a DLL. It also has a little bit of source code that it brings down. But it also has this tools folder. And in that tools folder is an install.ps1. because the package manager console is PowerShell, it is really truly PowerShell, you can run PowerShell scripts. There's init.ps1, install.ps1, and uninstall.ps1. It's pretty straightforward. Install runs at install, uninstall runs at uninstall, and init runs every time your project loads up. So this one needed to do something on install. So it looks like this one needed to add two project references to GACT assemblies, assemblies that we knew people already had. So when you say install package entityframework.sql server compact, it goes, brings down the DLL, adds the reference, brings down the code, does a little bit of pre-processing, and then it runs this little tiny PowerShell script. In this PowerShell script, I'm just adding two additional references to make sure, because I depend on those. Those are dependencies that I know the people already have. They're not dependencies that belong over here. Although we're talking about adding a feature to the NuGet spec file to say, I depend on these DLLs that I know are already there. Now, in this particular example, we have only one lib folder. But I think there's actually a project out there called JSON.net, which is a great JSON serializer. And let's see if that's here. Newtonsoft JSON, here we go. I'm going to install that. And we'll bring that in. It looks big. Why is it so big? Let's find out. So I'm going to go off into Explorer again. And ordinarily you'll never look at this packages folder. You'll just know that it exists. But why was this file so big? Looks like it was 2 megabytes. Let's open it up. Ah. So check this out. This is a great example. So if you put your DLL in the lib folder, then it'll get added as a reference. Now, this particular author, James Newton King, could have made separate .NET 2, .NET 3 Silverlight packages. But that looks sloppy and it dilutes his product's brand and it's confusing. Instead, rather than putting things in the lib folder, he is using our convention where one folder per build of his library. So he has one package that you can install and it'll automatically pick the right one for .NET 2, .NET 3, and then notice that he's got Silverlight 3 for Windows Phone plus Silverlight 4. So we've got this convention set up where we're future-proofed, and if Silverlight 5 comes out or Silverlight 4 for Windows Phone, the convention is set. All of this is documented on the NuGet site. But this is a really nice, clean way of doing this. He's got the PDBs for debugging as well in each of those folders. Notice that in this case, he has a complicated package, but he didn't actually need any scripts or anything else other than that. So you can see that you've got a lot of choices. He just wanted to add a reference. I think that another thing that he could maybe do to make it even more convenient would be having a Newtonsoft.sample, having a separate package that would just show sample information. Now, this app start is a convention that David Ebbo came up with, that oftentimes applications want to do something at application startup in ASP.NET. So he created a thing called the Web Activator. And when I brought this down, it added this Entity Framework SQL Server Compact. And this brings up a really important aspect of NuGet. NuGet packages don't modify code. Here's an example of a package, the Entity Framework SQL Server Compact, that needs something to run at startup, but it really isn't appropriate for it to dig into my global ASA and change my code. So we needed a way to run things at startup. So David used a new feature in .NET 4 called pre-application start method. And here, we can be rest assured that when the application starts, this one line of code that SQL Compact Edition needs will start up. This means that I can add and remove this package, and it will either run at start or not run at start. And I don't have to worry about tidying up source code because of it. It also means, as a convention, that if I go get something else, like let's go and get Ninject. Ninject is an inversion of control container, and I believe that there's an inject dot MVC3. There we go. Notice here the dependencies. He can even include release notes. This gentleman actually released a version that had the folder name wrong. The folder name is not important, but it is nice to be tidy. Ah, and see this here. So he's actually using one of the advanced features. He said require license, and he's got the license terms for us to look at, and I can click I accept. All right, hit close. And now look at my app start. So now we've got another one. So this shows that Lego piece philosophy that I keep talking about, and I talked about it in the keynote. Here I've plugged in two totally unrelated things that both have a similar need. They want to run at startup and do something. And they've been able to plug in and then unplug from my application because of a convention that we all agreed on. We're using the web activator and we're using app start. So it's a really nice, clean way to do things. All right? So one other thing that I could potentially do is, while I have made folders, I've made local folders here for little projects that I'm working on, I could also make a local NuGet server. And there's basically two or three ways to do this. You can go and get the software that runs NuGet.org. It's actually running on Orchard. Orchard is an open source CRM that Microsoft is working on that is owned by the Outer Curve Foundation. And NuGet.org is an instance of Orchard. And that Orchard gallery, that packaging gallery that I'll show you in a little bit, can be run internally. So you can bring down the gallery server, I think it's galleryserver.codeplex.com, and run that yourself. So when I come up to here, I can go and contribute packages. That can be done again graphically. So one person might use the NuGet Package Explorer, the graphical interface, create a package, package it up, and publish it and never see the DOS prompt. They might go up here into NuGet, sign in, remember my password, is it right? That's not a good sign. I think it was because I'm in Belgium. And here are my submissions. Now, you all know my access key, so you could, like, hurt me now. But now I fooled you, so now you don't know my access key. Oh, shoot, you do. Now you don't know my access key. No, just kidding. That access key is used to push those packages from either NuGet.exe or from the Package Explorer. So I take that access key, that unique key, and I'm going to do this here. I'm going to... There we go. Because I know that someone's going to do something bad and delete all my packages. That access key is being used to authenticate myself. When I say nuget.com.exe from the command line, I can apply that. So one person could do it graphically. They go up, they get the access key, and they do everything in the website. Another person might do everything in the command line like I was doing. The creation of the package, the publishing of the package, even to the point where they would integrate that into their build server. And I'd really like to see... folks like Telerik and different software vendors that have, you know, build systems plug in the ability to publish from a NuGet system. You've got JetBrains and all these different systems that have continuous integration. It'd be nice if NuGet were a formal step. So then if you had an open source project that had a cruise control or some continuous integration system, it could go and build and then publish, which would just be another step. We've already seen a number of projects that are publishing on a regular basis up to the site. The other way that I could make a NuGet server is kind of a weird perversion of how we like to do things. It's not an example of a good NuGet package, but I thought it was kind of funny, so I want to show it to you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make an empty ASP.NET application. So this has nothing in it, okay? I'm going to go and say add reference. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go and grab one called NuGet.server. And this is not recommended. It's just kind of an interesting way to do it. So what this is Phil Hack and friends basically packaged up an entire web application into a NuGet package. So I make an empty project, and it brings down, like, everything. So then I can go and run it, and I'm running a NuGet server suddenly. Isn't that weird? So it was kind of a proof of concept in the sense of it really should be something I would download from CodePlex, but I kind of wanted to see if it could be done. So what he did is he made a folder here called packages. See how that is empty right now? We'll go and do our favorite Windows 7. Whoosh. Whoosh. They should add that as a sound effect. And then I'm going to say click here to view packages. And they see that there's no packages here. And then I can go and grab, like, my not very awesome package. Stick it over here. And now I've got a package. So that service is automatic. So this would be the how do I set up a NuGet server at my work in a few minutes example. If you want to show something to your boss, file new empty web application, install NuGet.server, drop a couple packages in there, package up a few things for your work, and boom, you're set. The boss likes it. Then you go later and you create an actual gallery and you make it so people can formally install packages. It's a pretty interesting example that Phil did. So he ended up doing that for me, and then he's hosting a couple of packages, like he's got the official hacked NuGet server and things like that. One of the other things that you can do, speaking of bringing down large amounts of data and automating kind of boring tasks, I wanted to go and take something like an existing web application. Like, here's a fresh web application. This is a web forms app. Let's bring up our web form. So here's a web forms for application. You notice the web forms urls.aspx. This is the default, right? I thought it would be interesting to see if someone could make a package that would take a web forms app and convert it into an MVC3 hybrid application. Because MVC3 has some interesting things like routing, and a lot of people who have web forms want to do both. But it's a manual process, and it's really kind of yucky. So I built one. Let's try it. I'll bring up PowerShell. I built a package, and I'm still working on it. It's not anything other than a proof of concept, and sometimes it has some problems. Let me put it over here so we can watch it happen. And let's look at our web config. Looks like about 50 lines. Install package, add MVC 3 to web forms. So watch the right-hand side there. Yeah, so I have one thing that always fails. I'll show it to you and why it's failing. So now I've got scripts, models, controllers. Actually, let me uninstall it just to make the point. Watch the right-hand side. It's fun to watch that. I don't know why. Beep, 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 beep. Isn't that cool? Doesn't that make you feel productive? Remember what I said earlier about programmer happiness as it relates to automating anything in like holding your hands up, like, look, it's working. I don't have to touch the keyboard. I always feel like that if someone connects remotely to my machine and they're moving the mouse around. It's like, wow, I'm getting things done. I don't have to use the mouse.
Yes.
Okay. This is an interesting point also. Notice how I'm able to, without worrying about it, uninstall and reinstall this. We actually have some interesting tests where we run through all the packages and install them and then run backwards and uninstall them and make sure that the package, that the project is unchanged. It's really important that your NuGet packages tidy up after themselves. So now I'm going to go and run my application. Here's my Web Forms application. And here's MVC. So now I've got both. You remember these URLs maybe I didn't like? Because it's a hybrid and I've got .NET 4, I could certainly go in here into the global ASA. I could go and put in some routing code that would map that so I could have pretty URLs and you wouldn't be able to tell what was web forms and what wasn't. Now, there was an error that happened there that was kind of interesting. Let me show you why it happened so that you can get thinking about it. This particular package does a couple of things. Add MVC3 to web forms. I'll open it up in the Package Explorer so you can see. It's actually simpler than you'd think and slightly more complicated than you'd think in two different ways. First, the obvious, which is how do I bring all those files down? I just manually put them in there. I did a diff with Beyond Compare and I figured out what was the difference between MVC and web forms and the models, views, controllers, folders. I packaged them all up. Notice that most of them are .pp because you want that to have the same namespace of your existing application. That's easy. The complicated part was the idea of routing. I've got an existing application and I want to add routes to it. Routing is something that is usually in the global ASAX. And I put a comment there to say, I did this for this reason and maybe you should think about doing it differently. But I basically go and register those routes. This is one of the things that you want to think about when you create your own NuGet packages, is how are you going to make it so that you just drop it in and run. It would be lame if I had you run this project and then you had to go and look at a readme.txt and then fix it. It's kind of against the Lego pieces mentality. The part that was difficult and why an error happened there and what I'm still working on is in tools, I wrote this install.ps1 because you can have PowerShell scripts that do interesting things. The initial example that we saw was a PowerShell script that added global references. That's usually the most complicated thing that you'll end up doing. This one here needed to do a little bit more. I needed to go and add references to make sure that this application was an MVC and a web forms app. But here's where things go bad for me. Because you're in PowerShell and because you're running inside of Visual Studio, you can do some amazing things. You can actually automate Visual Studio. You're in there in PowerShell, and PowerShell is a great administration application for doing COM and COM interop and things like that. So you can get a hold of Visual Studio. Well, in MVC, when you right-click on like the controllers folder and say add controller, you see how it's not here? Or if I go into a controller and I right-click, I expect to see add view and things like that. That is done when an application is an MVC-type project. But this isn't an MVC-type project, is it? This is a web forms project. So what I was trying to do was unload the project, add the MVC project GUID into it, close it, and reopen it. So then when I say add controller, it's there. Or if I open up the controller and right-click, add view, and go to viewer there. What that red error was something I haven't figured out yet. Because after this line, I descend into hell. I go and get a hold of Visual Studio. It's always nice when you see comments like this. It's like, it kind of works. I get a hold of the project, I figure out the current GUID. I go and I add the MVC GUID. And here's where it goes horribly wrong. I try to unload the project and then reload the project. And it works 6 times out of 10. I don't know why. And I don't want to write sleep 1 second in there, because I know that anytime you write sleep in anything that you do, you've done it wrong. Right? Anytime 4i = 1 to 1,000, just wait and see. Always I'm doing a wrong thing. So I'm going to try to figure that out. But I thought it was an interesting, you saw how it worked the second time. It's an interesting and extreme example of what someone could potentially do. Now, I'm not an expert at PowerShell, but I'll show you somebody who is and what they were able to do that I think is pretty impressive. One of the most advanced and most interesting packages out there is called MVC Scaffolding. And it's created by a fellow who is many times smarter than me, who is Steve Sanderson. And Steve has taken scaffolding, the idea of generating code, to the next level. I did the prototype at PDC last year, and then we hired Steve, and then he took it to the next level. So let me show you an example. Actually, I'll show you a better one. Let's do... Is this a good one? Let's see here. Let's do this one. So Steve has extended PowerShell so that I can actually scaffold out and create projects. So for example, I've got a model here for a stock item. It's got ID and title and price. By default, in MVC3, I can say add controller. Let me go ahead and compile this once. And like in the keynote I showed, when you drop this down, you had 3 choices. But when you install the MVC scaffolding package, he can get in there. And notice how Steve is now 2 items in that package. So I can access that NuGet package from here and generate a bunch of code. Or I can come out to the command line. Turns out that you can actually add commands to Visual Studio from PowerShell. So if I say scaffold, that's Steve. In fact, if I say get command scaffold, or I think it's alias scaffold, I can see that that's an alias for invoke scaffolder. So he's actually got an init.ps1 that adds commands to PowerShell. So when you add his package, it doesn't actually add anything in your project. It simply changes the PowerShell environment. So then I can say things like scaffold controller stock item, I think. And watch the right-hand side. And he's going and running T4 code generation templates, and he's getting me started. He's making create, read, update, delete, and all this kind of stuff. So he's made it more advanced than the one that comes with MVC. So now I've got create, read, update, and delete, which is nice and clean. But if you're willing to put a little bit of thought into it, he's actually made that extensible. And this is a really great example of a cool NuGet package. Let's do this. I'm going to torch that folder and reset it. And go back in. He's created a hierarchy of NuGet packages. He has one called T4 Scaffolder, and then he's got MVC Scaffolder that depends on that, and he allows you to make custom scaffolders. That's a good sign. Custom scaffolders to generate other stuff. Ooh. What's the definition of insanity, trying the same thing over and over and expecting a different result? I have way too many. By the way, one of the reasons it probably crashed is not NuGet, but it's the fact that I have a tendency to install like way too many extensions. I usually get myself in trouble. So he created a custom scaffolder. So you see this folder here called Code Templates. He made one called Controller with Ajax Grid. So it's got a T4 template that does code generation. And he goes and spins through and makes this cool jQuery grid. So this means that not only has he taken kind of NuGet to the next level, but then he's extended his own scaffolding system. And this is really powerful, and I think you're going to see more and more of this. So here I'll say controller, not just controller, but controller with Ajax grid, stock item. And I'm hoping that in the future we'll see scaffolders for web forms. You can be able to scaffold unit tests and all sorts of stuff. So notice here, he created only one view. Rather than making create, read, update, and delete, like we saw before, his NuGet package generated something else. An Ajax grid. So that everything's on one page. I mean, that's really kind of the promise of NuGet. And what I want you guys to think about and what the takeaway is not just how you can consume these things, because now you know they exist, but how can you modify them, right? Because there may be open source projects that you'll start pulling in, but then what could you build on top of that? You know, here's a basic Ajax grid example, but how could you extend that for your company and make it maybe an internal project or a private project? And because you can run multiple NuGet servers and have them in that list of packages, of package sources, you could have your corporate one first and then the open source one after that, and you can depend on packages. So you could make my company custom scaffolder that depends on MVC scaffolding, that depends on T4 scaffolding, and it'll go look at your corporate one, bring it down, and then go off to the official source. And you can build these really amazing things and then snap them together really cleanly. I'm hoping to see also commercial companies, I mentioned Telerik, DevExpress, those kind of guys, make it so we can buy a subscription to their software, their commercial software, and then get a URL to a private NuGet server. So that I can then access my Telerik subscriptions via a server. And think how clean that would be. That's pretty cool. So I think that there's room for open source and commercial software within this environment. Plus, the NuGet project revs very often. It's moving very fast, and there's a lot of cool stuff going on. And you can get involved now and affect the way that things are going. We've got a cadence that is very quick. We're doing a lot. We're doing right now monthly releases. So NuGet 1.2 is already out, and it's updating all the time with little features. So if there's something that NuGet doesn't do that you want it to do, then let us know or give us the code. The uptake on NuGet has been really, really great. So far we've had almost 600,000 package downloads just since the beginning of the year. There's 1,200 unique packages, almost 3,000 total ones. Downloads and uploads, total downloads are going right up. What are people, see, you can actually, oh look, people talking, there's Simone. Worst part, here we go, here's a criticism of NuGet. The worst part about NuGet is that it's unable to install itself. Like Inception. People are complaining now here. NuGet upgrade breaks the build. Now I have to patch. Oh, open source. Now I have to do some work. Oh, look, downloads just updated. That was cool. So I encourage you to go to NuGet.org, download this, start playing with it. This, when some people see this, like a light goes on in their heads. And I'm hoping that that light goes on for you, that you're already thinking about things that you do at work that involve copying code over or sharing libraries between projects at work that could be done in a more snappable way. It's more than just open source. It's about sharing code cleanly between projects. And also updates. The other thing that I forgot actually to mention, if I go over here, for example, and look at add library package reference and hit updates, it'll actually go off and tell us what packages have been updated. So you can see since this particular sample came out, there's been updates to those things. This is nice. I showed this a little bit in the keynote, the idea that we ship jQuery with MVC, but they always ship a version the next day anyway that's updated. So you can update live and automatically. We're also looking at ways to make it really, really easy for you to make your own new project templates. So your company could set up file new our company project with pre-installed NuGet packages as well. So there's a lot of really cool stuff going on right now, and I would very much encourage you to get involved. Help us spread the word. Thank you very much.